This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina is now in a state of emergency in the effort to contain the coronavirus. Governor Cooper issued the declaration yesterday. Businesses are asking employees to work from home. Universities are preparing for remote classes. Jay Price is WNC's military and veterans affairs reporter, and he is with us now. Welcome back, Jay.
Hey, Frank. Glad to be here.
So the state of North Carolina is a state of emergency, not a state of panic. So tell us what a state of emergency really does for us.
Well, some of it's formal and some of it is more subtle. It makes a state eligible for federal emergency funding to do things like buy more supplies, medical supplies. It activates – the state's activating a central emergency operations center to kind of help agencies coordinate from just one location. It gives the state more authority to protect the consumers from price gouging, increases county health departments' access to state funds. But it's also just one more chance to underline for the public how serious the threat is, kind of the nature of the threat, and what measures people should be taking or not taking.
All right. And I know you spoke with the Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Mandy Cohen. Let's listen to what she had to say about testing for COVID-19.
There has been a number of issues related to tests that's been very widely purported. The first was the first round of kits that were sent out had an issue with them. I think understanding the supply chain wasn't clear. The FDA hadn't been as fast at approving the alternative testing methods, but I think that folks are talking now. I know everyone understands the urgency of it and are working hard together. This is not about blame, and this is really about us making sure we can protect folks here in North Carolina.
That's DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen speaking at a news conference yesterday. I'm with Jay Price, a reporter here at WNC. So now, what kind of testing is available, and what's the capacity here in the state? I'm sure it's changing every minute.
Yeah, everything about this is changing, and maybe not just every minute, but every 15 seconds or so. And, before I say much else, I should note, first off, I'm not a public health expert. I play one on the radio. And I should also preface anything I say by noting that anything I do say was true as of a few minutes or a few hours ago, but may no longer be. Mm. This story is reaching into seemingly every corner of life and it's moving quickly. As a journalist, I don't think I've seen a story since maybe the 9/11 attacks that affects so much of society and is shifting so quickly and in so many ways for such a protracted period. When you're trying to keep an eye on it, it just feels crazy how much information is coming at you. And I'm sure for the average citizen, it's daunting and it's triggering a lot of anxiety. But there's not been a lot of testing. As of yesterday, the state had tested about 44 people, I think, for the new virus and had enough kits to test another 300. By next week, it hopes to have more capacity, enough to test another 1,500 or so. But private companies also are coming online with private companies with large capacity for testing, like LabCorp, which is headquartered in Burlington. LabCorp told me they got rolling with tests on Friday and now have the capacity to perform several thousand a day. So we're going to know a lot more soon. All this was hampered, as the DHHS secretary said, by some of the original tests being flawed when the CDC sent them out. And she and other state officials, officials in other states, really seem frustrated by this. Mm-hmm. They don't have a good picture of what's going on out there. If you don't have testing, you're looking through a tiny little, not even a keyhole, a pinhole, trying to figure out what's going on inside a house. Data is kind of a lifeblood of good public health, and they don't know what's going on out there.
Well, and when it comes to testing, it sort of works both ways. Public health officials are looking at perhaps classes within the population that should be tested. And then there are people who think, well, maybe I should be tested as an individual. Are we in the process of developing protocols for knowing, sort of who gets tested and how, and whether it comes from above or whether you can walk into an emergency room or your doctor's office?
Yeah, they had initial protocols, and she said yesterday, I think it was her, and as opposed to the governor, but they had several people talking. But one of them said yesterday that the protocols were frustrating early on because they were so tight. But, there wasn't any testing capacity.
Right.
You're seeing those loosen up and more people are going to be tested. And it's just going to be a more widespread thing so that we know what's going on. They were definitely holding off if you hadn't had, for instance, contact with someone who had traveled overseas or hadn't traveled overseas yourself. These things are going to loosen up. And on those vulnerable populations. I think this is the key point that's really emerging now, is that there are huge differences between who's vulnerable and who isn't, both to actually contracting this illness, but also suffering severe consequences from it. Those vulnerable populations, you know, at that news conference yesterday, the governor and Dr. Cohen talked a lot about the importance of protecting people over 65 and with underlying medical conditions, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes. Those are the people who are seriously at risk. And meanwhile, children are at almost zero risk in some sense. The World Health Organization says in China, just 2.4% of reported cases were among children, and only 0.2% of the cases were children who got critically ill. No deaths there among children. That's among more than 44,000 cases. And for ages 10 through 38, and I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but these are really critical numbers for understanding who's right at risk. For ages 10 through 38, the fatality rate was 0.2%. The fatality rate among adults, according to WHO, over 80, nearly 22%.
Right. But you've got a lot of things to consider here. So there is the vulnerability of any individual to serious illness or death, and then the fact that they might be a carrier, and so the people they might come in contact with. So while an 8-year-old might be not as severely at risk for the most severe consequences, they can carry it to other places. These are things we have to worry about. And I know that, for instance, there are protocols now being developed. The VA has come up with a protocol for testing, right?
Right now,
screening anyway.
Well, there's screening, particularly, you know, I know about the ones in North Carolina. You know, we have systems, healthcare systems that the VA has here that are anchored by VA medical centers in Salisbury, Asheville, Fayetteville, and Durham. And, you know, they have various clinics out in the community. And so they've started over the weekend and into Monday, depending on which one you're at, they started screening with, you know, basically a simple questionnaire, but trying to figure out who might, you know, be someone who needs testing and needs to be isolated from the rest of the population going into these facilities. And as you might imagine, with that, those numbers for the different generations, who, you know, who's at risk and who isn't, VA patients tend to be older and sicker than patients of any other healthcare system. This is why you see all these problems with the so-called VA scandals. They have a lot of health issues, and they are uniquely vulnerable in cases like this. And you definitely don't want this to get loose and rattle around inside a VA facility the same way it did in that home in Washington State, which is now where most of the fatalities have occurred. So they're screening, and they may escalate that if things get worse. They may start doing things like temperature testing as you come in. You're going to start seeing other hospitals perhaps do the same thing, depending on where they are and what the situation is.
Talk a little bit about institutions. I know that while students are on spring break, Duke suspended all of its on-campus classes yesterday. So talk about some of the factors that contributed to that decision.
Well, you know, it's essentially the same thing everyone else is looking at. They wanted to promote essentially social distancing in a big way, you know, not so much with the elbow bumps, but, you know, and you're seeing a lot of colleges and universities across the country take this same step or start to prepare for this step where they're just going to be doing class by distance learning, essentially, or at least do that as much as possible. UNC hasn't done that yet, but they've sent out a letter to students and faculty telling them to prepare for it in case they need to take that step. NC State is you know, telling its folks other things, but they're all trying to get ready, and they've got some breathing room because the three I've just talked about, Duke, NC State, and UNC, are all on spring break. And, you know, lemonade out of lemons here, this has given the campus leaders time to start preparing for what to do. You've got graduation coming up for seniors. My own daughter's a senior at a small college in Philadelphia where they've had a lot of cases in that area. And I think today they're probably going to announce steps very similar, which, you know, like Duke, is extending spring break another week, which again gives administration time to kind of sort the plan out and get ready to do telecommuting, distance learning things. But also to start to work on other plans for academic continuity. You know, what happens to your grading if you're, you know, if you get essentially blocked out of class for a while? What happens with graduation? It's complicated stuff.
Well, let's talk about businesses, too, and business communities around the state. We'll start in the Triangle. Do we know what impact, what businesses are telling people to work there, and then the economic impact of all this?
I think you're seeing a lot of different things from, you know, practically everyone is going to be handling it somewhat differently. You did see the state leadership come out yesterday at that news conference and specifically mention the Triangle, because all seven confirmed cases are here in the Triangle area. And this is something you're seeing around the country, too, is you'll see leaders focus on specific kind of potential hotspots or hotspots. There's one outside of New York City now where they've got essentially a lockdown. And you're seeing this overseas as well. They're not just concentrating on a state or a region, but specific areas where there are problems. Seven cases, and all of them of known provenance. None of them were spread kind of community-wide, but from community contacts here, but they suspect that there already have been some to a degree. And so you saw them come out with recommendations that were kind of generalized for across the state, but you also heard them give recommendations for employers in the Triangle to start to do things like be more lenient with leave policy, tell people to telecommute as much as possible, to change the kind of start and end times, kind of stagger things so they don't have a ton of people going through common areas at the same time. All kinds of things like that.
Jay Price, WNC's military and veterans affairs reporter. Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for having me, Frank.